Welcome, everybody, to Dan Excelsior, the Mostly Marvel podcast. This is episode 133. I'm Ricky, with you as always, Dennis.
What's
and
up?
Back for three times in a row, best friend of the show, Travis.
Oh, what's happening?
What's it? Three in a row? It's not three in a row, bro.
It's not three in a row?
No.
3 weeks in a row? No.
Can I use the R word? Can I use it?
Oh,
Joel was here 2 weeks ago.
Was it?
Yes.
Was he? What's it? Oh my God!
I'm gonna have to have words with him.
It was Joel for the Wolverine.
Travis was before Joel.
I think Clark was before Joel. Remember, Travis was on X2.
Oh yeah, that's what it was.
Yes. So Travis was at the start of our little X-Men journey, or the second week of our X-Men journey. So,
and Days of Future Past.
But we're still happy to have you 2 weeks in a row. That's awesome.
Yeah, you, I guess you got to come back next week.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Can't let this all stand. What the hell's going on?
No, it was cool because, like, you know, last week.
Three-peat. When we were, three-peat up.
If you want a three-peat, but I just want to make sure I know. What's the movie next week, Ricky?
I don't even care.
You don't
Apocalypse.
Care.
Apocalypse.
Oh.
Oh, I spoke too soon. God damn it.
You hit the 3-peat for the X-Men. I think that's commendable.
No, you don't understand. Okay, so I went from let me see to actually actively lobbying for it. You don't understand. Like Apocalypse as a character for me. A comic book reader, especially in the 80s to 90s, and wait, and Sabana is about to show up. It is about to be on. It was not at all, and I need to talk about it.
If you want to come back,
you heard it here first for the three people. Just clip this intro, slap it on next week's.
Because I will tell you right now, I don't have volunteers for that one.
You should not.
What's Apocalypse's beef? What's his deal?
I mean,
not in the movie, but just in the comics.
I'm gonna honestly put this out here. I feel like you're putting the cart before the horse. Shouldn't the Apocalypse conversation be next week when we're talking about Apocalypse?
True.
I mean, let's save Apocalypse for next
week. Tune in next week to find out what Apocalypse's meat is.
Yes. And mine, because damn it, it's a lot.
I only say this because
it's a lot.
I think we have a lot to talk about today.
Yeah,
and so let's give Apocalypse. He's going to get plenty of our time next week, you know? What? Am I wrong?
No, it's me and you, Apocalypse.
All right. I mean, look, dude, Jake, I'm just saying. Oscar Isaac, Apocalypse, it had everything going for it. Psylocke, it's not going to happen, though. But we'll talk about it next week. But let's focus on.
Because it was basically Zack Snyder. And remind me, I'll tell you about what that means.
Yes. Let's talk about this week. This week, we're going to be talking about Deadpool. We finally got there. The whole reason we're doing this is to wrap up the entire X-Men franchise before Deadpool 3 comes out in July. I think we're going to do it. We're on pace to get this done pretty quick.
We're actually probably doing it pretty well because we've got 3 movies left after this: Apocalypse, Logan, and
Phoenix.
Dark Phoenix.
Deadpool 2.
So we got four more movies.
Four more movies. We got this.
We'll take a week off probably between now and the movie 2 at some point, but it's lining up pretty nicely.
Yeah, we did good. But we're also going to be talking about this week's episode of X-Men 97, Tolerance is Extinction Part 1. So be ready for that. But before we get into those, I mean, like, is there anything else nerdy you guys want to talk about? I realized last week we never even talked about. Like, did you guys watch Fallout?
I'm not through Fallout, but I like what I've seen in Fallout. It's dumb where it needs to be dumb, and it gets the seriousness of what, or the fucked upness of what's actually going on. I think they nail that balance fairly well.
Travis has opinions, I can tell.
It's the chef's kiss.
As someone who is an Interplay alumnus, and for those who don't know, like, Interplay is the gaming company that actually created Fallout. It was not Bethesda. Bethesda bought it from Interplay. But, and having done work on a Fallout game,
that doesn't translate well to our audio.
Okay, listen. The chefiest of kisses.
The wettest of chef's kisses.
It is so spot on. I mean, it's like, and I say this a lot of times to people who, you know, because I've done my fair share of work in my professional life, actually going from, you know, different mediums, from TVs to movies and to games. And when you try to explain to someone that a video game, you know, a narrative video game is no different from any other narrative, and so just treat this as not some, you know, place where you have to put game mechanics in your movie. It's not necessary. It's like, stop trying to make people play a video game.
It's in not your Doom, movie. The movie.
No, oh my god. and so the things that they can add into this product in such a way that if you are a gamer, you go, holy cow, I get it. And this is going to be the theme all night, by the way, the meta-ness of it all. Right? Like, when you were able to see, like, what they were doing in the TV show, that you immediately understood what that was if you were a gamer, and they didn't overemphasize it. It was just mm-hmm. what it was. It's like, that's all anyone has ever been asking for.
Yeah.
Like, when you do these adaptations, right? Like, just relax, dude. Like, we get it. And what happened? Holy cow, people are responding.
Yeah, I mean, The Last of Us actually took out all the game mechanics out of the movie or out of the show and just did the cutscenes, and it's better for it, right? Like, it's
boom.
I actually am not a fan of The Last of Us as a game or Fallout, but I prefer both as shows.
Well, like, the show,
wow.
In the case of Fallout, it definitely adds to your that awesome, Fallout though? Experience. Like, it doesn't take away from what you've done in Fallout or what that experience
is.
Yeah. Right. Like, I think that's the issue with, like, the Halo show. I like the Halo show, but it is not the Halo I grew up with. It is a very different thing at this point. Whereas
I don't even know what it is.
Oh my god. It's cool, you know, but
I kind of like it because I never played the games.
It's disrespectful in that sense, though. I mean, it's I think Halo has an interesting story. That's why I think it's lasted so long. But to the point of the Fallout show, it's like it is all the same world. It just takes place in a different part of it.
Yeah, and just to be clear, so that I don't, so like, for anybody that ends up watching me, you know, actively say I don't like The Last of Us or Fallout as games, it's I don't like that setting. Okay. Like, if I'm going to go and relax in my video game world, I don't want to be reminded
more depressed.
Yeah, I don't want to be more depressed, well, right? So like big now, but let me finish. Totally let me finish before you even add. As a man who lives his life in a wheelchair, I have no delusion that when that apocalypse, any pick whichever one you want, comes, that I'm even going to bother trying to exist on this.
You did pretty well in the Mad Max one.
Except the Mad Max one. That's the only one that's ever shown favorable treatment of disabled people.
Is it favorable?
Every single Mad Max, whoever's in charge, They got like a weird deformed buddy hanging out next to him, man. Who runs Bartertown? Master Blaster
runs Bartertown.
You're the Salacious B. Crumb.
Immortus Joe had like his cousin or something in a full-on wheelchair right next to him. And I was like, hell yeah, Mad Max gets it. But yeah, if it's not Mad Max, I'm not down. I'm not down for that apocalypse. That's it. That's my, yeah, you heard it here.
Hey, I can't even argue with that, dog, at all. At all. Game blouses. Okay.
That's all I got to say.
The Last of Us show highlighted the fact that in that game, you murder a lot of people. If they did that amount of murder in this show, it would be a very different show.
That's true.
Yeah. But so I just prefer watching it. It's like I'll watch apocalypse stories all day long. I just don't want to play them. Yeah. That's it.
I forgot where I learned this, but it was how do you appeal to two separate demographics simultaneously? And it is an art form. It really is. And if you take like the old Warner Brothers cartoons, for example, and you have a character and they're holding a stick of dynamite and then it explodes, right? Kids laugh because, oh my God, like, you know, this blew up, right? While the adults are laughing because now that dude looks like Hitler. You see what I'm saying? And so it was meta back then, right? And so I appreciate when a medium, gaming, can get to that point with another medium and you can appeal simultaneously to both gamers and noobs, and they both are just pleased out of their minds. And that is why I think that Fallout show is the chef's kiss.
It's quite excellent.
Yeah. I don't think it's lost. Like, Todd Howard had a pretty big hand with that show in terms of the creative direction. And the same thing with The Last of Us. You had Neil Druckmann doing, he directed, right? Or did he produce the whole thing or whatever?
He directed
a bunch of the episodes. I don't know if all, but most.
But, you know, bringing people who made The Thing to consult heavily on The Thing.
Heavily.
Never a bad idea.
No. And like I said, man, you can't argue with those results, man. Like, their streaming numbers are out of control.
And then the
game
sold
too.
Out now.
Like, I know.
You can't buy a copy on it on disc anymore.
See? Oh, really?
That's although hilarious. Everything that's out there right now is out.
I could see that.
That's hilarious. All right. Honestly, I didn't expect you guys to talk this much about it, but I guess I should have. But I want to carry on that meta conversation. Let's just talk about the meta-ness of the most recent episode of X-Men 97. Because tolerance is extinct. As a reminder, it was part one of three. So we just dipped our toes in the pool that is this story.
And what are beats? But holy cow, like from a toe standpoint, holy cow, right? Like, this show blows my mind weekly. Go ahead, break it down.
I want to know. Okay, so just to recap, the last we last ended on like a cliffhanger with like learning about this new villain that's been teaming up with Mr. Sinister and is responsible for the attack on Genosha. And honestly, if you go back and look through all the episodes of X-Men 97 this season, this character Bastion has actually been in the background of a lot of the episodes. Mm-hmm. Like even in the scene, you know, the Forge episode where it's Forge and Aurora, Aurora sees a picture of Forge in the military. There is an arm around Forge, and it's actually Bastion's. He has somehow been present through the whole thing, so that's kind of cool that they were like teasing it. But yeah, Bastion is this crazy, I guess in this show, a cyborg that is a descendant of all of the Sentinels, including Nimrod, who is a Sentinel from the future. And he is partially born of the techno-organic virus. So, like, these are all things that have been referenced throughout the show, you know, like through the season and the old show as well. It's a little different than the Bastion from the comics, but they get the heart of the character. He's a dude who hates mutants, and he makes Prime Sentinels.
He is a mutant though, right?
I don't think he's a mutant in the comics. I think he's an actual Sentinel. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Recap for the noobs like me. Trask created the Sentinels and the big goofy looking robots.
And then eventually the Master Mold.
Master Mold's like the big bad super.
The robot. One. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And then in the future,
Nimrod is the like the super evolved version of a Sentinel. So like he is like he's the Days of Future Past Sentinel, basically.
But there's just one, not a ton of them.
I think there's more than one Nimrod actually, but sure.
I'm pretty sure there are more than one.
It doesn't take more than one. Efficient. That's the part. And then, like in the comics, in the cartoon, actually in the old series, Nimrod has appeared on the show because he time travels back. He'll follow Bishop through the same time portal or whatever. And stuff.
Over the course of this Sentinel trajectory, though, they become sentient. Is that what I'm understanding?
Eventually there's like internment camps and stuff, and like it's ruins. It's very similar to Days of Future Past, which we talked about last
week. But they kind of like go on their own. They start becoming its own thing at this point. They're not like
Sentinels just kind of, you know, it becomes a little Terminator, you know what I mean? Okay. And that's kind of why the X-Men's always been so charming, is because like, yeah, it's this whole allegory for like, you know, hatred and marginalized people and stuff like that. But for some goddamn reason, they also love sprinkling in a lot of Terminator. It's a lot of Terminator in the X-Men stories, and which means it's a lot of killer robots, and time travel. That's the core of X-Men, right? Like that's why we were bitching so much when we watched Days of Future Past, because we're like, Jesus, how did it take them 7 movies to get to the robots and the time travel? When like it's all X-Men does all the time when they're not being, you know, subjugated to bigotry. They're not
blowing up their house.
Can I get a witness?
When it's not bigotry or blowing up their house, yeah. It's robots and time travel.
Make it happen. Yeah.
Like I know I'm getting ahead of us too, but that's why Cable's in the second Deadpool movie, because they know you can't do this without time travelers and crazy stuff. Yeah. So that's what this episode was, is revealing Bastion and his secret weapon, the Prime Sentinels. They're basically like the silent majority out there in the world that like really hates that these mutants are coming for their jobs, and they sign up for this program without even fully knowing what's happening to them, but they're turned into cybernetic, mutant hunting machines that fly around and shoot lasers out of them. And those are the Prime Sentinels. And so I couldn't tell for sure. Did Beast accidentally activate them all when he started scanning for them?
He just, their cover was blown. I'm assuming they're all
connected. I don't know. I'd have to rewatch that. You know, yeah. now you're making me go,
I would feel bad for Beast if he accidentally turned them all on, but they all turned on at the same time all over the planet. It got pretty rough, and it was fun because we got to see the characters, how they're displaced all over the place. Like, right. Jubilee's still in Brazil right now with Roberto. And then like Storm, we didn't even get Storm in this episode. And then Jean and Scott and Cable, their son, are investigating stuff back at Bastion's hometown. And, and then Magneto's held captive by Sinister and Bastion. And so there's stuff going on there. We're jumping around to a lot of different places, but all at the same time, you know, even at the X-Mansion, Prime Sentinels activate and it's on. And it's and I got to tell you, I'm going to ask you guys what your favorite moments of this episode were. And I know you're probably thinking, as I wear a Spider-Man shirt, which I can't really get it on the screen too well. I know you're thinking it's that little cameo from Spider-Man. It's not. You know why? Because they've actually done those cameos in X-Men before many times. Like Spider-Man has shown up in very similar like capacity, where it's just like he's swinging by. Shown up.
His only his hand.
No, he's actually been in episodes of X-Men too. Like
X-Men have been in his episodes.
They did. I thought they did a crossover.
He has not been in X-Men aside from a hand.
Fair enough.
X-Men have been in the same X-Men have been in his show.
Yeah, yeah. But anyways, my point was that wasn't what made me geek out. Like I thought it was cute. I thought it was really fun. I actually smiled for the animators because I know that they probably geeked out when they found out there was on the call sheet, like, hey, we gotta draw Spider-Man for a quick minute, and that's cool. No, my favorite thing is because I grew up watching this show in the 90s and loving this show, but there was one thing I hated more than anything about this show, and it's that they never let Wolverine do the Wolverine thing, which is kill the shit out of people and just cut them apart. And oh my God, when they let Wolverine be the best at what he does in this episode, the kid in me wanted to scream because it finally happened. I finally got to see him just, and I know they showed us these things self-repairing and stuff like that. I don't give a goddamn. He sliced them in half, man. It was so cool.
Well, that was kind of some of my beef with this episode, my dislike, as you will. Not the violence. I think it was cool. It was cool to see Wolverine like slice things, but like the one thing that I just couldn't get out of my goddamn head was when they transform, they're like, they have like rocket, like they're flying like a sentinel with like huge ass thrusters on their feet.
Mm-hmm. But you know, and why their thrusters are huge ass, right? Because they're way tons.
It looks super silly. But I, in hindsight, I think that's how they got away with the violence, by over-exaggerating that transformation.
Because yeah, I don't know why that looks silly when Iron Man's been doing it since 2018.
Yeah, but he's not. He has a suit on that does that. He's not like
they are the suit. They literally become technological. It transforms them. It's hidden inside them. There's like nano machines.
It looks goofy.
That's literally what Iron Man did. He's wearing nano machines in Endgame and Infinity War.
It looks goofy.
Oh my God, Ricky, the hills you want to die on all the time.
That's Travis, my beef. I like Travis, the episode though. It's a great episode.
Travis, tell us, please. What was your favorite thing about this? I have an idea. I have a second thing, but I want to hear Travis before I say my second favorite thing.
I have a professional opinion about this. Like, honestly, a professional opinion.
You always have a professional opinion,
Travis. No, some of these are fanboyish or whatever, you know, but there's I really do
the LinkedIn opinion.
So
sponsored by LinkedIn, we'll put this in the bottom.
Okay, I'm gonna get a little deep, but I think it's necessary. Nerds. Well, actually not nerds, geeks. And there's a difference. Geeks are very much like jocks. And a jock just goes crazy hard in the paint over their physical. A geek goes crazy hard in the paint. Or whatever it is that, you know, they're geeking out about. It is not, these two things are not unlike, you know, they're the same. Now, because you have these two sort of, understandings, it becomes very hard to square pr-
practically anything. Well, that's interesting. Now I'm like really bugged out because it's all this to say, I guess, Wolverine does Wolverine things that you have always seen in a comic. And you know it so well that it becomes like your muscles in geekdom.
Yeah.
Okay. And so when finally someone executes at that level in a different medium, it validates your entire existence.
The porn argument. You know it when you see it.
Yes.
Like, you know good Wolverine when you see it.
Yeah, and you're looking at that because every geek has those sort of stupid arguments with one another about, man, if Superman were here and a Hulk was here, who would win? And whoever had the most muscles in geekdom could win that argument by stating whatever it is that they know, some obscure thing or whatever. And that's what X-Men are giving us on the regular. And we can't take it. I know I can't. I really can't take it. I'm like, I'm watching a cartoon. I won't even say anime. I'll say like a cartoon that is blowing my adult mind because it is giving me the vibes that I had as a kid when I was, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And
it's honestly like a good video game remaster, right?
Yes.
I will still die on the argument. I don't think it's the same show, but it's the show you remember.
Well, and... isn't that but Ricky though? That's exactly what Dennis said. Like it looks like they grew up with that target audience.
No, exactly. Yeah, so yeah.
Okay.
I wouldn't want it to be the same show though. That's what I think we're saying, right? Is like if it was the same show, I'd be like, we wouldn't be talking about that every week, right? We'd be like, well, Wolverine could open a door again. Where
they choose to make those differences between this show and the original, that's where the juice is, right?
That's where the juice is for us now. And that's because we've trained that muscle for 30 years. You know what I mean? And so our muscle is way more jacked than it was when we were kids.
Oh, the geekness.
They know, but they're saying they know what levers to pull in regards to the show. I'm like, all right.
But they're showing
we need this level of X-Men-ness, but we got to raise the tone a little bit in this direction.
But here's the thing. This is why I say it's the same show. Because if you were watching it in the 1990s, they were pulling the exact same levers back then, too. I promise you, if you watch that show.
So he's saying it's relative, and I feel you. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, they were doing all the things that I saw in the comics and that I couldn't see if I watched any other cartoon that was like Super Friends. I never saw that shit in the comics. That was stupid. You know what I mean? Like it's just
And so that's where the professional in me is. It's like, you know, taking mediums like a comic or movie or a novel or whatever and boiling down all these understandings into like these hardcore building blocks that you can base a game on. Okay. And then having that somehow like validated, right, through a show that says, man, Wolverine would just have to scratch this thing and it would fall to pieces. Yeah. And he scratches something and it falls to pieces. And you go, yes, nerd strength.
Exactly. And I should give 2/3 credit to Wolverine because Nightcrawler was there doing the thing with three swords.
His scene when he pulled Wolverine through.
Oh my God. Was that first person bamfing where we saw it through Wolverine's eyes?
Ooh-wee.
That was so crazy looking, dude. That was amazing. For me, that entire scene was just like the best thing. But like from a story perspective, honestly, the other best thing was Bastion's monologue about how he achieved his goal and what, you know, like if you just keep picking on the underdog, eventually people will feel sorry for it, right? And so that's the reason he had to do Genosha, because he had to commit an atrocity so huge that like people would be numb to it, right? Like they he basically said, you know, if you don't have skin in the game, your answer is apathy. Like, and that hits so hard, man.
Oh,
when I heard that line, apathy is your answer. Think about Columbine. Think about how powerful Columbine was.
Yeah.
And then we made a movie out of it. And then,
and then
every shooting that happened after that, we just got a little bit more numb. Yeah. Yep. And it's sad. It's sad to me. Yep. I remember the worst one being like when I went to work and it was the day before Philip and Kate got married.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that Friday there was a school shooting in Texas, I believe. And I was so like, when I heard about it, I was so sad, but I was like, dude, that's going to be the shortest news cycle ever because that royal wedding is tomorrow.
Yep.
And by Monday, no one was talking about that shooting. Yeah. And it's sad. And so when I heard Bastion say those lines, I was like, this is why X-Men is the best. It's because
when Dr. Doom is criticizing your plan and trying to like starting to walk back from your association with you, you're a pretty bad dude.
And also when Baron Zemo has notes,
he's on the phone. It was like Zemo's dropping knowledge on FaceTime, dude. Really,
I can't co-sign this, man.
Like,
no,
I know
that just
wow.
That's like putting one over, right? In wrestling, when you get like the big guy to like, you know, like let the new guy shine for a minute. Like that's what they were doing with Bastion right there. They brought in Dr. Doom and Baron Zemo to just legitimize Bastion as this world power of a super villain. Yeah. There was all the nerd buttons were pushed in this episode.
All of them.
And it wasn't even the end of the story.
No, it's one of three.
It ends with Magneto flying to the North Pole and electromagnetic pulsing the entire planet.
Entire planet. Because, you know, why the fuck not? You know what I'm saying? I ain't playing with y'all.
This show does a good job. And I think we'll get there at the end, but it'll be earned. But I have yet to see a point in this series where the X-Men are in distress or overpowered. You know, they might be in an unwinnable situation, but they're never in a situation where I don't see them not handling it to the best of their ability. Like, they're just kicking ass to the end.
Can I, like, here's another analogy. Like, this cartoon series is like reading the comics at 10 times speed.
It really is, right?
It's like it's a cut to the fucking quick type of thing. And
just the Madeline Pryor episode alone covered like 6 months of comic book
theater. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? And so if you're like a comic book reader, you're like, wait, okay, you know. But if you're like a normal person, you're like, oh my god, this is amazing.
I know. It's but you know, people who are
they're mainlining comics.
Yeah, they are. They're injecting it straight into our eyes. It's amazing.
Straight into the ocular.
Yeah. Okay. I think we've given enough flowers to this episode. It's great. I can't wait for the last two. This entire season is already a 10 out of 10 for me. I know that. It's just been that the whole time. But Ricky, I'm going to give you the chance. You can pass or move on. Do you have news before we talk about Deadpool?
I have news that's not that exciting. We can go to Deadpool if you want to go to Deadpool.
What do you say, Travis? Do you want that exciting news?
I don't know. I kind of feel like I do. Like you know what I'm saying? Because I'm thinking to myself, I'll be the judge of that.
Right. All right. Well, okay. Time for the palate cleanser. Let's get to some news. Cole Hauser joins Marvel's Fantastic Four in an undisclosed role. You might know him. He was in I, Tonya, and he was in the
Cobra Kai.
Some people are saying he's Herbie. Some people are saying he's Mole Man. What's your guys' preference on
this guy? Straight up looks like Mole Man.
You'd be a good Mole Man. Dude, this Mole Man. Holy shit.
Just put him in the glasses for like 10 seconds with like really punching him in the face.
And this guy's Mole Man. I'll be happy. I'm convinced now he's Mole Man. I need
he's giving me such the Mole vibe.
That's it, dude. I don't want to see. I want, because I like this actor. I think this guy, he puts his stamp
Richard
on
Jewell.
I don't even want to discuss this anymore. Like, if there's like a con to this, I don't want to hear it. This dude is Mole Man. Let's make it after.
He's Mole Man, and he'll be the best Mole Man we've ever seen.
Thank you.
We did technically get a Mole Man in a Fan 4 stick, right?
We got one in freaking the Invincible or the Incredibles too. This will be the best Mole Man, promise.
Alrighty.
Thank you for that news. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you know that Captain America movie that's coming out next year?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If you don't recall, that movie was supposed to come out like in a couple months or got delayed. So like anything goes, the McDonald's toys are still on the table. And those are actually releasing right now. But this is our first look.
He didn't even say it with a spoiler warning. He's just like, here they are.
It's our first look at some of the characters. I think the one everyone's excited for is that little
red guy. Is that Falcon? Look at him over on the top right. He looks great.
Falcon, Joaquin Torres, Falcon up in the top right. We got Red Hulk in the bottom left.
Oh, boo.
We got Sabra still in the bottom right. And I believe that's Blink, the woman in the pink.
Is that Blink?
I'm pretty sure that's a pop-up girl.
Yeah. I'll have to...
100%.
If that's Blink, it's a little different than I would expect it to look, but...
Not Pink, Diamondback, sorry.
Okay, I was going to say.
Or not, is it Diamondback?
That sounds more appropriate.
Diamondback, yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are. I don't know what you want me to say to this one. It's bad news. Thanks. Let's move on.
And last but not least, Chris Hemsworth is doing some press for the upcoming Mad Max movie coming out in just a few weeks. And he kind of made some comments on Thor: Love and Thunder. He essentially takes blame for that movie not performing as it was expected. He says, I got caught up in the improv and wackiness and became a parody of myself.
That's a bummer. I don't like when they speak ill of their own projects. I really love Love and Thunder, and I feel bad that he feels this way about it. That makes me sad.
Chris can do no wrong.
Yeah.
In my mind, I have nothing but a wicked amount of respect for him as a actor, and I just can't hate on the dude, right? Like, and I just like you, Dennis, I really like that movie, so what else?
Yeah.
Well, Chris, you heard it here. Comes drop by on the show and we'll try to convince you otherwise.
But now we talk about Deadpool.
But now we talk about Deadpool.
Ricky, I always give the recaps. I want you to give the recap for this movie.
Deadpool came out 2016, directed by Tim Miller, starring Ryan Reynolds, Gina Carano, and I can't remember who else in the movie. Stan Lee's in there somewhere. Wade Wilson, a merc for hire, gets some troubling news about his health. And seeks help through some shady means that transform him into the merc with the mouth known as Deadpool. That's kind of it, right? Is there more to it?
Sure. I think you missed the mutant part, but sure.
He's not a mutant though. They activate his mutant genes.
Yes, he's a mutate. is technically what you would call it. That's what they call it in the Marvel universe, a mutate. Mutates, but his power is basically like the weaker version of Wolverine's healing power. But he also comes with the crazy side effect of looking like burnt pepperoni or burnt, or just, I don't know which one. He looks like Freddy Krueger from top to bottom, right? Pretty much. And that's pretty accurate. That's accurate to the comic. He's got a fun little weird cast of characters in this movie, characters we've never really seen before. Maybe if you're a diehard comic fan, you might recognize some of them. I didn't recognize them. I never really liked reading Deadpool comics. So I
definitely two actors I have not seen in a hot minute.
TJ Miller.
Yes, that's one.
TJ Miller and who's the other one?
And Gina Carano.
Gina Carano. Yes. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, there's some awkward casting in this movie, and that made it a little weird to watch, but I still thoroughly enjoyed watching this movie because I texted Travis yesterday and I said, it's just so damn nice to finally see the X-Men universe, you know, represented like the way we want to see it, even if it's just in the smallest capacity of like those little fun jokes with Colossus and Negasonic Teenage Warhead, like or visiting the X-Mansion. Like, this movie just loves the viewers.
I've gone on record saying
who are the viewers?
The geeks.
Say it one more time.
Every geek with every muscle built from consuming all of the crap that Rob Liefeld drew in the 1990s.
Thank you, Dennis. Mm-hmm. And that is, and I mean this sincerely, I defy you to find another media execution so acutely aware of its meta-ness that it is giving itself a singularity, because everything means something else, means something else, means something else.
Deadpool to 2.
All the people.
Deadpool 2. I think so? I think Deadpool 2 is more meta because it recognizes that it's a sequel also. 2.
Wow.
Back to the Future 2?
So, oh my god, wait, no, honestly, okay, you made a great point, okay, Dennis, like, I can't even, but you know, the only thing that scares me more than that is Deadpool 3. You're right, yes.
Deadpool 3 is already, we know it's going to be more meta than the first two ever could be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you, like, if they sneak a She-Hulk into that movie, I'm just done. I'm done. Because, like, then the amount of fourth wall breaking is just too much. It's too much.
I can't even.
Yeah.
I really can't. Because it is almost as if, all of a sudden, every geek that you really know is literally the ultimate worry right now. They're just boom. You know what
that
I'm
movie
saying?
Theater's gonna stank opening night.
Oh, it really is. And I am there for it.
It's gonna be really stinky. I think that's Deadpool Wolverine stinky theater.
Thursday Comic Con stank.
Let's fucking go.
I don't. Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool comedy is not my cup of tea. I don't, and I recognize that's a me thing. It's not a writing thing. I do like, I think the jokes are 60-40 for me on what lands and what doesn't. But I think this movie shines in the fact, and Travis can't touch on it, it doesn't bite off more than it can chew. It knows what it is.
Oh yeah, the scale of this movie,
the
scale's
perfect,
honestly.
The you know, the whole build-up to the movie with that leaked test footage and whatnot, if they're gonna make it or if they're not, that entire test footage track is in this movie. Mm-hmm. It is like the it is basically the entire opening sequence. So if you went in with that hype just to see what essentially what you were promised shot for shot in the movie, that's as cheesy as that sounds, that was crazy.
That's your set, bro. But do you even geek, bro?
If I had a nitpick for Deadpool as a movie, it's that beginning goes so hard that like it's impossible for the movie to maintain that momentum. And so there is a moment in the movie that kind of slows down and tries to get a little serious and a little, you know, tries to make you feel for the cancer of it all and everything. And I feel it. I get it. It was trying the best it could to create a love story and then create this tragedy in the love story. But the whole time I'm watching that, I'm just like, can we get back to the killing? And
well, they're still like in I think this is why Deadpool 2, really? Like to your point, is like a better movie. There's still some of the dancing around, like, you know, with superhero movies, you got to show the actor's face. You got to.
I just so get tired of time. Yeah.
And they kind of play around with that here in the middle stuff.
Yeah.
But by two, they're it's in fucking like he's in the suit
all the time.
Almost,
Yes, you may.
We're already geeking out, right? Like, we're already getting ripped on our geek muscles. But then there's something in there for your significant other.
Oh, yeah.
That's totally not your bag. But because it's executed so well, holy cow, does it like make this exponentially better? Because now you and whomever it is that you're chilling with have something special, right?
True. True.
Holy cow, when that thing is literally a mutated killing machine. Bravo, everyone, bravo.
I think it's more, it's not so much the love story part that really hurts me, because I love the, you know, the part where they're having sex through the entire calendar year. That is amazing. Happy women's, you know, what is it?
Women's Day.
Yeah. It's oh my God. That's just excellent. But it's actually the part where he goes into the program. That's when it gets a little slow. I do appreciate that he hangs dong after he blows up everything. I think he officially is the only superhero to hang dong in his origin story, unless you count Superman in 1977. That was baby, you know what I mean? Like I was like, it's a choice, Ryan Reynolds. You made a choice to show your burnt up looking dong in the scene, and good. Thank you for that, sir. Yeah, there's a lot of little details that make it fun for me. So I'm not complaining that I didn't like it. I'm just saying the spectacularness of the beginning of this movie, from the car, like total, like the freeway murders, to the meeting up with Colossus, to like destroying every single limb he has trying to fight Colossus, meeting Negasonic Teenage Warhead, all of that was just so excellent that like the Francis stuff was just like, okay, I get it, you're annoying to Francis and he's gonna be your villain, but like it does at least set the scale appropriately, right? Of this bad guy's just an asshole, like that's all. He's not really like
Deadpool's not saving the world. He's not.
Yeah.
He's not. It's a very personal. He's trying to fix himself. That's his story. He doesn't give a shit what happens outside of that.
Yes. Yes.
Isn't it great that they somehow made a movie where the main character really does suck all the attention away from everything, and somehow. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah, and you're not upset, right?
Because like, it's not about you, Francis.
I don't care about Francis, and I'm okay with not caring about Francis. Like, he would just take up space from Deadpool, right? And that's, like, I love just watching Deadpool do everything. Like, the montage where he, you know, is getting his suit perfected. Oh, man, mm-hmm. that shit is so hilarious. You know, like, every time he's just doing Deadpool stuff, it's just great. Hanging out with Blind Al, talking about masturbating and cocaine. Like, that's, like, it's just beauty. It's just, it's perfect.
He uses the guns. Things. He uses the swords. He does the flips. He does it all. He does.
Yeah.
Well, it's the thing that everyone steeped in this information knows that Deadpool would do. And somehow that is so goddamn validating.
Mm-hmm.
That we literally lose our motherfucking geek mind.
There is an entire section where you learn that Deadpool and Blind Al's whole roommate situation is contingent on he will pay all the rent as long as he can make this blind woman assemble IKEA furniture all day long. And I don't even know what the hell that is. But it's amazing. It's amazing. And I want more of that all the time. By the way, did you recognize Blind Al from Fallout?
Yes.
I feel like Ricky.
Oh, I saw her. Yeah. I don't really know her name. I didn't want to say Blind Al's in Fallout. I feel like that's
Leslie Uggams. I believe is her name.
It is Uggams. And somehow that is so part of like, Uggams was like, I don't know. It was so 80s that, you know, when I hear it, it almost makes me feel like 10 years old. Just, you know, because for some strange reason, I associate Uggams with like everything that is new in broadcast medium, period. For some strange reason. And why is that so awesome? That even that fact... makes Deadpool, holy cow, even better.
There's a lot. I think the other thing that's makes Deadpool really interesting also is the music choice. Because, like, I mean, one of the first big songs movie is the Salt and Pepper Shoop and stuff like that. And then DMX and stuff. And
DMX is pretty good.
Yeah, and then what amuses me about that is because if you think about it, Deadpool was created by Rob Liefeld in the 90s, right? Like, so he is actually, like... he is a thing that like everybody who is my age or Travis's age or whatever was growing up and was seeing a new thing. Cause you got to understand like Marvel was living a fat, you know, stack, like just the biggest, like, I wouldn't say laziness, but like they were running on a streak of just the characters.
Well, he's literally a Deathstroke ripoff, right? Like let's be real here.
He is.
Oh, Deadpool?
Yes.
Actually, he's a Lobo ripoff.
But no, his name, Wade Wilson, is a parody of Slade Wilson.
Yeah, that's very true.
And Deadpool versus Deadstroke. And stuff. But what I'm saying once is again, what made him
more meta.
Yeah, but what made him interesting is like, you know, is just his newness. Like mm-hmm. when these guys were cranking out new characters in the X-Men universe, it was like, yes, give me more. I just want more, you know. So like it's really cool and it resonates and it resonates with a lot of readers. And so what's cool about him is that he's actually of the same age as the people who were reading his comics for the first time in the 90s. And so mm-hmm. he likes all of the music that his target demographic would. So what makes it feel nice is that you're watching Deadpool and you feel like multiple levels of meta for like, they made this for you. They made this for you, especially ending the credits with a Ferris Bueller's joke. Yes. You know what I mean? Like,
it's
the entire movie from beginning to end was made for a very specific audience. So mm-hmm. I don't really fault you if you don't like the humor that's in there sometimes because
I don't. Yeah, I don't think it's a bad movie because of it. I can recognize that that's a me thing. But even to like the story, like they threw out almost the entire Fox universe bullshit conglomerate that is that what that story was at that time, and they acknowledge it and like, hey, we're gonna do our own thing. This is it.
And it's so much
and it's there for the better. They're not, and they also don't try to set up. I mean, obviously the teaser is Cable, right? But they're not setting up anything more. No grand team or grand this, grand that. It's just Deadpool on an adventure doing Deadpool things. The end.
Yeah. The reason I think that Deadpool is so awesome as a concept is because damn if Deadpool ain't you.
Yeah.
You know, he's like that awesome 5-year-old or 6-year-old in you that says, fuck it, I'm gonna make my own rules.
He really does. He makes his own
somehow,
story. Yeah.
And somehow, why is that so cool?
Because he lives in the same universe as all the people that you fantasize about.
You know, including you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Thanks, Deadpool. I mean, honestly.
We got to wrap it soon. So do you have any last awesome words of delight about Deadpool?
I'll give you one, and actually thinking about this, conversation and prep for this conversation tonight, I really had to take a look at Deadpool, and somehow, like, judge it the way that it should be judged. And it is very hard for me not to give this movie, in my opinion, 10 out of 10. Everything about it is awesome.
Well,
it is actually probably one of my only 10 out of 10 movies ever.
I think it's close for me. But it's definitely the most perfect X-Men movie we've ever gotten at this point at that point when it came out, for sure. What about you, Ricky?
I think it's a solid 9 in that if every superhero origin, DC, Marvel, whatever, was this scope, I'd be fine with it.
This movie's better than 90% of the MCU's origin stories.
I agree.
At least 90%, at least, possibly higher than that.
Thank you.
Yeah. This movie is better than at least 80% of the MCU movies.
95% of them.
Yeah. That's how.
Yes, because that's how on point it is.
That's how shocking it was because it came from Fox. You know what I mean? Like it was like
they were on a high. Yeah,
they were on a high. They were on a high.
You went to Deadpool,
and why? And maybe I've tapped into why this whole franchise is amazing. It's because on every conceivable level, practically, how is Deadpool not the most perfect execution of practically any concept you have ever seen?
It's quite amazing. I gotta give it to you. It's a good, and it's also the great way to wrap this up because we do have to get going. I love this movie and I'm so happy we got to talk about it. Thank you for finally getting us here, Ricky.
Thank you for Travis for coming in on the two-peat, soon to be three-peat.
Yes.
Right. We're watching X-Men Apocalypse next week, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
Let's keep going.
Tune in to hear our thoughts. But until then, with that, true believers, enough said.